My name is Yosef Grossman. I'm from the OU. We have a program in the OU which this year is under that auspices. So I just speak about just for a minute and introduce the Chasheva person who's going to be giving this year. The Ask OU is advanced seminars in Kasheris. And Baruch Hashem, we started 18 years ago in the OU, and Baruch Hashem, we just finished a three-week program, our 12th three-week program, where we had Koilel, Yungalite, and B'nai Yeshiva, and Smicha students from all over the United States. Mexico, we even had somebody there this year. Our speaker today is one of the amudim of the program, and the program itself has been to many yeshivas, Tar V'Das, Tver Shushalayim, Arachaim in Queens. This is also called Arachaim, right? There's a different Arachaim. Based in Medrash Kavoya, Lakewood, many times we have had Magide Shir from Rav Belsky, who last year he gave a shir there to three kollelim together from Beis Medrash Kavoya, but other Magide Shir. And it's a pleasure for us to come to kollelim wherever they are. I think this morning even Rabbi Tzvi Nussbaum spoke at Rabbi Rudinsky's kollel, also on dairy, on DE. Which the OU doesn't have DE. Maybe Rabbi Gordon was going to speak about it. Anyway, it's a great kavod to Hamafrasomis Ein Tzrichim Rise. I'm sure that by the end of this year, you'll be convinced that Rabbi Gordon is one of the biggest experts around in dairy, especially what's Negev Bizman Azed, the Metzias of Cholv Stam, Cholv Yisrael. So it's a big kavod for me personally to introduce my good chaver, Rav Avram Gordon Rishlita.
Thank you, Rabbi Grossman. Thank you, Rabbi Shiner, for inviting me. It's a big chus to be here, a big covet to be here. If I ask if you can please hold any questions till the end. If I say something, I tend to go very quickly, unfortunately. So if I'm too fast, please just slow me down, tell me. And if I'm not clear, tell me. But if anything besides the speed or the clarity, let's try to finish the presentation, so to say, then we'll go to questions. Because otherwise, the questions very often can be more than just the presentation, and we can't get too far. So let's start. Yisur of Halavakim, we're familiar with the Mishnah, the Gemara, the Avodah Zarah, the Rambam, the Shulchan Aruch, and so forth. The question is, how does Chol Yisrael supervise? That's the first thing. Chol Yisrael, having the Yid of the Chaliv, the Yehudi of the Chaliv, how to supervise? So when I first started dealing with the OU with Chol Yisrael, we used to supervise Ahava Dairies. It's no longer a business, but we used to supervise them, the OU plus seven other kashrus agencies. I talked to Rebelsky about it. At that time, there were Mashkichim at Ahava who were living on the farms, but they weren't watching the Chaliv every moment. And Hisachdus made some type of takana in which there were punch clocks, and Mashkichim every 20 minutes had to be there at the Chaliva. So I asked Rebelsky, what should we do? What should the position be? Should we require this or not? So he told me that Rav Schwab Zatzal from Breuer's in Washington Heights, in my neighborhood, when they started the Ha'olam cheese many years ago under Breuer's, Rav Schwab required as follows. He required three Hashkocha visits. We know the Shach says Yotze V'Nichnas is fine for Chol Yisrael. You don't have to have a Mashiach watching every second. Tchilas Echaliva we require, some of the Shulchan Aruch, the Ramah, and we require also Sofa Chaliva. The reason for that is that at every Chol Yisrael production, all the Chol Yisrael productions, these are all non-Jewish farms. No, there's no, except for Eretz Yisrael maybe, there's no such thing as a Jewish Chol Yisrael. They're all not Jewish farms. So we have to have somebody there sealing up the tanks, the tank that holds the milk, sealing up the truck, carrying the milk to the dairy where it's going to be made into cheese or pasteurized into bottle, whatever it is. We have to have Mashiach coming in at the end to seal up what's been done with chasimos. However, though, Rav Schwab also required during the chaliva. Every chaliva is about a six-hour milking. So during the chaliva, at least once in the middle, unannounced, the Mashiach must come in as well. So that's the official policy. We said it many years ago. Tchilas chaliva, sofa chaliva, as well as one time at least unannounced during the chaliva. That's the Yotze V'Nichnas we fulfill what the Shach is talking about in Kuf Tesvav Sif Aleph. We had a question many years ago. There was a farm, a dairy company in Denmark under a European kashrus agency, And this is very high tech. In Europe, dairy is much more high tech than in America. America is way ahead in a lot of things, but when it comes to dairy and food processing, I think Europe beats us hands down. So in Europe, they have this robotic farm. Rather than having farms like we have in America, in which people aren't milking the cows like the Amish farm by hand, pulling the udders, but they have in America their milking machines. They've had them for decades. We probably remember videos of going to farms as kids, seeing milk machines attached to the cow's udders, and the milk comes out, and you remove it. There, they have the case in which the cows, they go to eat their food, their feed, they go to a trough, an eating station, and when they go to eat, then there's an electronic chip on the cow, and some type of, I don't know the technology, some type of identifier on the machinery near the trough, and the cow's going to eat, then these machine suction cups come up on the udders of the cows and start milking the cow as it comes to eat. And each cow is identified, and the suction cups are fitted, tailored per cow, to the size and the location of its udders. And it's all robotically done. Once a day, every 12 hours or so, they stop the system, clean it out, they just let it go. So one agency there wanted to say, we don't require hashgacha. Just set it up with a mashgiach, start it, and let it go. Rebelskin or Schechter at the OU said no. They said you should have the mashgiach, and they're the same frequency. Their reason, as far as I remember, is many, many years, or probably 15 years ago, was that even though, there are two things. Number one is that in the idea of the mashgichim are to make sure that there's no taros of chalav behemah tameah. So in this case, even though it goes by itself, and it's true, the suction cups are fitted to the cows, so their udders where they are. However, who's to say that there's not somebody, or shechter, who's to say there's not somebody taking some milk from somewhere else, from whatever animal, and just adding it into the milk silo, when there's no way to monitor that, first of all. That's what shechter said to me. You have to have a tight, Khaliva, you can't just say, well, since they're all tailored to the cows, you have to make sure that the milk supply is secure. That's the idea of the hashgacha, securing the milk supply. Therefore, unless the milk supply is secured by physical mashgichim for Chol Israel, it's not acceptable. Belsky also held that we should be the same frequency as we have here. Belsky seemed to hold, but the whole idea is, you have Yisrael Roeh, having the Yid there. It doesn't matter the reliability of the system. Having the Yid there is a necessity no matter what. So though you said the mashgichim must be there, so tchilas chiluva, sofa chiluva, and at least once during every 6-hour span. It's 12-hour chiluva, we're going to have 5 visits. At least 5 hashgacha visits, 3 in the middle and an hour. That's how we set it up at the time. Chol of Stam, we talk about Chol of Stam all the time. Chol of companies, as Ramosha talks about, and then Yoredeya, in Chelik Aleph, Mem Zion through Mem Tes, and later on another Chalakim Yoredeya, and Igros Moshe. Those days, Moshe wrote it, in terms of Chol HaStam, the Metzias was, Moshe talks about in the second or third Shuv in Chelik Aleph in Yoredeya, that there were farms that were not licensed, unlicensed farms. And Moshe says, since the Beis Yosef says that if you have milk that's low bol yad Yisrael, while the milk is still in the hands of the farmers, before it gets to the hands of transition to the consumers, there's no Chol HaSisser. And therefore, you had some unlicensed farm. The farms had no pikuach hamemshala, no government supervision. But since these farms were then transporting it to a non-Jewish dairy, and then to the consumers, so from the non-licensed farm that had no supervision, no government inspectors, to the non-Jewish dairy processors that bottle the milk and pasteurize the milk, there's no Chol HaSisser, even though there's nothing to verify the farms, that the farms had no behemoth tomatoes and so forth. That was in those days, and that's where Moshe posted on that. However, the Metzias is different. I'm not saying you should rely or not rely upon it, but the Halacha is the same. But the Metzias, though, today is much better than it was then. Today, every single farm that sells milk to the commercial milk supply is government inspected. State and federal. State is primary in all these cases. State and federal are primary. But every state, so if a farm wants to sell milk to a dairy processor, to a dairy facility that's going to bottle and make it into cheese, butter, whatever it is, that farm must be inspected by the government, it must be licensed by the state government. And the way it's done now is that when a tanker, the milk tankers that you've probably seen them on the road, these large silver tankers, they stop anywhere between 1 to 12 farms and they pick up milk and more milk and more milk, they add until they're filled up, then they go on to a dairy bottling plant and they pasteurize the milk, they heat it, kill the germs and bottle it, whatever. These tankers, when they go to a farm, the way it is now, every single farm today has to be approved, and there's a sample flask of milk from every farm that has to be put in the back of the tank or in a special section, and that flask is barcoded. And if that barcode doesn't match up at the receiving dairy, if it doesn't match up, it means it's not a licensed provider of milk, the milk can't be unloaded, it won't be received. So today, not only are the dairies themselves inspected, but the farms are thoroughly inspected. Not only that, even the transportation, the tankers, any tanker today that's carrying milk is inspected by state governments not only for sanitation, to make sure that, you know, it has the proper washes and the proper detergents and so forth, but all their loads are inspected. So if the government sees that the tanker is carrying, they see they're carrying milk, unidentified farm, that's a very big problem. If the farm is unidentified, not licensed by the government, being inspected, that's a big problem. So say the whole trail, it's chilavad sof, from the farm, every single farm, through the tankers, through the factories where the milk is processed, the dairy products are made, every single thing is licensed by the state, inspected by the state. That's that. I'm not saying that this doesn't affect, it doesn't affect the halacha mikra in terms of the, you know, if you don't rely upon halacha, you rely upon it. But in terms of people saying, well, it's not reliable, there's nobody checking it. That's not true. Not true at all. Not true at all. Don't rely upon it, it's fine, but it's not, it sees today as much tighter than it used to be. I talked to Rav Elsner Schechter about different countries. Even though Rav Moshe wrote about America, but many countries have dairy policies that are actually equal, if not better, than in the United States. Canada is equal to the United States. European Union, actually, EU countries, those countries actually have a similar, if not better, dairy standards than the U.S. In fact, and we'll talk about this hopefully later in terms of butter, some butter, there's a big concern about butter. I'm jumping ahead a drop, but just to illustrate this. The main concern of butter is that butter can contain whey cream, non-kosher whey cream from non-kosher cheese production. And in America, there are a lot of butter plants that use whey cream, they use regular sweet cream from milk, all types of creams, they blend creams. In Europe, you can't have that. In Europe, if you have sweet cream, regular cream for making kosher butter, so to say, you can't have whey cream in the plant. That's the European Union regulation. So their regulations are very tight there. So European Union countries qualify. I one time got a letter from, two letters, one from Chief Rabbi of Moscow, and the other, I forgot his name, Pinchas Goldschmidt. Another one, we got it from Rabbi Weich from Ukraine, and they said that the milk regulation, they felt reliable there for Holostom as well. I believe the OU at the time did accept it. I talked to Rebelsky about it. He mentioned that there's one Gedol Narev Sisrael said you don't even need that because since Chazal were only gozer or gzera on a mitzias in which there is no regulation. If everyone called Yishayahu ben Avyasa, whoever wants to do what they can do, that's the mitzias. If there are regulations in place, even if the regulations are worthless and you can cheat and bribe, that's not the mitzias there goes. Rebelsky was not happy with that at all. He says, no, it has to be regulation that has a mirsas. There's an anansade. We know that there's a reliable inspection going on, that this is chalav behemah tahara. But based upon that mitzias, in the Goldschmidt and the Rabbi Bleich provided the presenter, Rebelsky felt it was reliable, at least at the time. In terms of chalav stam, the notable Rishonim who definitely would not accept Chol HaVstam today would be the Rashba and the Torah Sabayis and the Ravid as well, and the Rashba quotes. They hold that Chazal's Gezerah was you have to have Yisroel Hu Mamish. Whatever type of Yediyah Brewer, Mochel Yediyah Brewer, we know that Chol HaVehem HaTemeh and Omeid. You can't make butter, you can't make cheese out of a Chol HaVehem HaTemeh. That's the reason that many poskim hold. If you have cheese, certainly have butter, the Shulchan Aruch Mikra Din, the Ram Mikra Din, if you have butter, this butter will be kosher. Because butter cannot have chalav behemah tameh in it. If you cook the butter, you make sure the butter has all the moisture removed, this butter is only chalav behemah tahara. It's a fact. It's like an anansade, it's a fact. But the Rashba and the Ravid, Doch of Yishtayadayim, the Torah Sabayis, and the Ravid also, and the Ravid and the Rama, no, it's not acceptable. They require you throw away. You have to have the Yid there. So the whole heter of chalav stam today, which is also an anasade. We know that this is the Chol Behemah Torah, as if we're seeing it. We know that, you know, the government is inspecting it, it's all reliable. There's a Yediyah Brura, they don't accept to be a Yediyah Brura. So in terms of Rishonim, the Rashba and the Ravid Avada would not hold the Heter of Cholov Stam. They require physically Yisroel Ohehu. That's very important to note, that idea. There is, on the other side of the spectrum, the Shita of the Pre-Chadash. The Pre-Chadash, as many of us probably know, holds that the Gzera of Chol HaVakum is really similar to the other Gzeras of Chazal, in which there is not a Davar Shebe Minyan, and therefore if you have a reason to say, if you have a good reason, a good svara why it shouldn't apply, it doesn't apply. So Pre-Chadash, we know, writes that if the Chol HaVehemah Tameya is far more expensive, the Chol HaVehemah Torah, where there's ain Tamei Be'ir, there's no Behemah Tameya in the ear, the milk is fine. We know that the Aruch HaShulchan and most poskim vehemently reject that idea. It's a Davar Shebe Minyan, it's not Sofer. However, the Pre-Chadash, there are communities actually who rely upon the Pre-Chadash. I was told, and somebody showed me a letter from one of the Rabbanim, one of the Mashkichim, head Mashkichim in Mexico, not an Oyu Mashkich, but a separate Mashkich in Mexico, that said we rely upon the Pre-Chadash due to the fact that Here we have no behemoth tomatoes that are used for farming here, or for milk, whatever it is, and the cost of the Chol HaDeim tomato is normally very expensive, like mare milk in Canada, mare milk in France, horse milk in France, is like 15 or 20 times the price of cow milk. Somebody showed me something about camel milk. There's a concern. One of the other agencies contacted me and says that there were articles recently about camel milk. Camel dairies in Pennsylvania, they're based in California, they have farms in Pennsylvania, Amish camel farms. Somebody was saying, what have we to do with this? I contacted the state agencies, and they said these aren't licensed. It's not even defined as milk. Can't even be sold as a dairy product. But besides that, if you do a little research, you see that camel milk is 20 times the price of cow milk, or even of it's much more something like goat milk or sheep milk. So the prechadash, for that reason, even if it is licensed, you wouldn't have to worry about being camel milk, because it would be camel milk not messing up the milk supply. But we don't. Most of us, most didn't hold like prechadash. Most postmen don't like prechadash. It's a das yachid, and we hold that the chol avakim is a davar shebeminyan, and therefore require either re'iyah or Rav Moshe has the abrura, which is the equivalent of re'iyah. That's the standard that the kosher agencies require, and assumedly will always require. Let's get into cheese now. Cheese, in order to understand cheese, we have to understand the structure of milk.
I just want to point out that we once got a question to OU from a chaplain in, he lived here in Arsameach in Muncie, and he was a chaplain when they went against Saddam Hussein. He wanted to know, could he drink milk there based on Moshe? And Rebelsky said that there is a shush of camel milk. Mm-hmm. And in the New York Times, the article they wrote, that people drink camel milk. So this heter is
for the U.S.
The
yeah,
States.
Definitely not for Arab countries. Definitely, they're the camel is the equivalent of they're the cow milk is probably the equivalent of camel milk here.
Is the color different?
You see?
Is the color different?
The color.
Yes, I forgot the difference. I researched. I forgot the difference. It is a different color. But if you're Ma'ariv, the whole chashash is you're Ma'ariv. So if you're Ma'ariv, then you couldn't tell the difference. That's the So let's talk a little bit about cheese, or maybe a lot about cheese. In order to understand the halachas of cheese, it's helpful to understand the composition of milk. We know the structure of milk. You can see how HaKadosh Baruch Hu created this amazing thing called milk that has all these components. And if you manipulate the components of milk, you can make any dairy product in the world. And you can understand the halacha so much, it all comes alive, so to say. Milk is really a combination of four components, critical components. One is protein. Milk is full of protein. The main protein in milk is casein, C-A-S-E-I-N, casein. And the word, the German word is kas, Yiddish is kez, cheese. The main tochen of cheese is protein. So casein, which is the main protein in milk, is the most bulky, prominent protein in milk. There's also whey protein. Whey protein is minuscule, tiny proteins that are also contained in milk. So milk has casein protein and whey protein. That's the first thing to know about milk. There's casein protein is the main protein. That's the protein that makes milk white, and that's the body of the cheese. And there's also whey protein, which is minuscule particles of protein, which we'll get to hopefully in 5 or 10 minutes. The second thing the milk contains, a lot of things, just some of the generalities, is fat. There are fat globules that float around milk. If you imagine, these bubbles, large, they're yellow-colored, microscopically yellow-colored bubbles of fat float around the milk. If you homogenize milk, what you're doing is you're actually breaking down the fat so the milk is smooth, because the fat makes milk a little bit lumpy and bumpy. It's not fully smooth. They homogenize milk to make it smooth. It has a smooth texture. There are no bumps and lumps and stuff. It's all smooth because the fat globules, which are very large, are broken down. But the fat. Second thing is fat. The third component of milk is sugar, lactose. Lactose, which is sugar. And the fourth component of milk is bacteria. A lot of bacteria in milk. When we pasteurize milk, we kill off the harmful bacteria. Because if it's not killed off, if it increases and so forth, it is very harmful. One should never drink unpasteurized milk. It's a no-no. Never unpasteurized. So, bacteria. And all these things, the proteins, which are the casein and the whey protein, as well as the fat and the lactose, the sugar, and the bacteria, are all suspended in what's called milk's aqueous phase, the water, the watery part of milk. Milk is mostly water. It's biologically, chemically, it's water. So, again, the protein, which is the casein and the whey protein, the fat, the lactose, sugar, and the bacteria are all suspended in water. That's the milk of water. How does one make cheese? So in order to make cheese, one has to, as I mentioned, get the casein out of the milk and make it into a binyan, bona, make it into a binyan. How does one do this? There's a problem. HaKadosh Baruch Hu created, in order that milk should always be a readily available, nutritious beverage full of protein, casein cannot be separated out of milk easily. Casein floats around, dispensed evenly in milk, and you can't get it out. The reason is two reasons. Number one, casein has a negative electric charge. Casein particles, called micelles, casein particles have a negative electric charge. They repel each other. You cannot, if you have a milk, the casein will never settle to the bottom of the milk and say, oh, now we have casein, now we can sort of form it into cheese, we have the base of cheese. It doesn't happen. Casein will disperse evenly in milk, like those little snowflakes in a, whatever, like in the you know, there's a fish tanks, whatever, and they repel each other. There's a negative charge to every casein particle. They cannot go near each other. They cannot attach to each other. Number two is that all casein has a coating, microscopic coating, called kappa casein, the casein cover, kappa casein. Scientists describe it as like a hairy covering on the casein that prevents it from sticking together. If you have cheese is, you know, a hard cheese, the casein is stuck together like a gel. It's a solid chefza there. The casein naturally can't stick together. It has a hairy coating on it, microscopic. You can't see with your eyes. Hairy coating, it prevents it from sticking together. How do we, therefore, get the casein together to make it into a piece of cheese? We have two problems. It's negatively charged, it all repels each other, and it can't, even if you pad it together, it's not going to stick anyway. It's all like covered. It's like taking balls of dough with wrapped in socks. They're not going to stick together because there's socks covering the balls of dough. You can't attach them together. So what we do is we have two ways to attack the defenses of casein, so the casein can be aggregated into cheese, clump it together. Number one is through acidification. If we add an acid to the milk and neutralize the negative charge on the casein won't repel each other. It won't stick together, but it won't repel each other, each particle of casein. You can therefore, it can be gathered together. And that's one type of cheese called acid-set cheese, cheese that uses no enzymes. All it is acid, such as cottage cheese, cream cheese, quark, pot cheese, farmer's cheese. All these cheeses are fresh ricotta cheese. These cheeses are cheeses that are made through acid. There's no cava, no enzyme whatsoever. They put acid into the milk to neutralize the negative charge of the casein. Therefore, the casein will gather together at the bottom of the vat where the milk is being treated, and you can just scoop it out, and you'll have the basis of cottage cheese or cream cheese. Whatever. Of course, cottage cheese and cream cheese, especially cream cheese, they add all types of stabilizers, gums and starches, and all types of chazerite, and you can cut it and shape it, and it looks beautiful. But the basis of it is just a bunch of casein with fat. Anytime you separate casein, the fat in the milk will be encased with the casein. It'll be grouped together with the casein. So that's one type of cheese, acid-set cheese. There's no Dover Hamaimed, there's just acidification, and that's it. And in fact, that's the old, if you leave it on its own, it would happen. If you were to leave milk unchilled on its own, what will happen is Kosher made it so that the bacteria in the milk will attack the lactose, the sugar, it'll turn into lactic acid, and this lactic acid will acidify the milk and create a form of a cottage cheese, like a very raw, crude type of cottage cheese. That's old-fashioned cheese making, so to say, without anything, just do it on its own. Just let it get warm, let it spoil, the bacteria will increase, they'll attack the lactose, turn into lactic acid will neutralize the charge of the casein, and it'll have the basis for cottage cheese. That's one way. Another type of cheese is to attack the other defensive casein, to take the casein and strip off its covering so the casein can stick together. And that's done through an enzyme. Kadosh Baruch Hu made it, so the rennet enzyme. The rennet enzyme, primarily found in the Ora Kaiva, but is also found in other places as well, in Prachim, and there are a lot of places you can find the rennet enzyme, or similar enzyme to do the same thing. It cleaves off, it takes off the kappa casein coating of the casein, exposes the inner gelatinous sticky part of casein, and you can make it into a nice curd, into a cheddar cheese, into a mozzarella cheese. And that's like imagine the socks with, imagine you have sticky balls of dough with socks around them. If you take off all the socks around them, the balls of dough will stick together in like a nice piece of cheese, so to say. That's what regular cheddar cheese, Edam Gouda, Swiss cheese, Parmesan, that's what all these cheeses are. Use an enzyme to remove the kappa casein, that's what it is. And you need the rennet enzyme, which is found in the Ora Kaiva, in the animals in the stomach of the kaiva, or the equivalent. There are other enzymes in nature that have the same effect. Once we have this, we can talk about Gevinas Akum now. Gevinas Akum, we know from the Gemara, Mishnah, and Chavtes, and Avodah Zarah, Lamed Hei Amud Aleph, and Mabez, and so forth, and Kuf Tesvav, and the Yoredeya. Yisra Gevinas Akum. So we know that the Gemara, the Amoraim, mentioned many reasons for Gnesachim. Shmuel says because the Imam is with Orke the Shinevela, Orke, that's the reason of the Rambam, the Shulchan Aruch, or Tofes, they use the stomachs of the Nevela, Sandover Hamayim, the Mashu of it will usher up the entire vat of cheese, the entire cheese. Other reasons are brought as well. We know Rav Chanina, because the Rashi Tosfos there, because of the Cholov or Giloy, different reasons that are brought for this. But if we assume, like the Mechaber, like the Shulchan Aruch, that the reason for Gevina Sakim, the Gezerah, is the Orke Vesnevela, what if we were to make cheese that doesn't require Orke Vesnevela? What if we were to make cottage cheese? Is there Isser Gevina Sakim on cottage cheese? I don't mean cottage, you could add rennet to cottage cheese. Moshe talks about it in Chaim's Beis. You can add rennet to cottage cheese to make it a little bit firmer, but you don't need it. Cottage cheese and cream cheese and these cheeses don't need any rennet. You can make them without rennet. Is there Isser Gevina Sakim? This is a Machlokas postkin. Schwab, Moshe quotes the truth from Schwab. Schwab asked him about it. Moshe says, you know, I can't be mocha, but I can't be mekel either on it. Some postkim seem firmly against it. The Aruch HaShulchan talks about Gevina Pshuta Shalanu, our simple cheese that does not use any Dovra Maimid, that has, he says, a problem of Gevina Sakim for cheese like this, cottage cheese, whatever. Ramosha mentions Gedolim Shiti, Gedolim who were matcha, this type of cheese. He says there's no Gevina Sakim problem on cottage cheese, since there's no Orkevus Nevela used, no rennet, there's no reason if it goes around such a thing, a different type of cheese. Rebelsky told me that's Rav Henkin. He said that's Rav Henkin, the Rosh River. Rav Henkin apparently was matcha, cottage cheese and cream cheese and so forth without requiring Mashiach to me. There's no problem with the Sakum, as long as the ingredients are kosher and the kalim are kosher, no problem whatsoever. It's a different type of cheese. Chazal Aser cheeses, Munasakum, that you would use Orkevus Nevela, a chash of using a traitha enzyme. There's no enzyme necessary for cottage cheese and cream cheese and pot cheese and farmer's cheese. It's a different ochel entirely. It's not part of the ingredients. You don't use it. It's like saying that you can't have this vegetable because you might have the shochet might have. There's nothing talking. It's irrelevant, totally irrelevant. So the national kashrus agencies, except for the Star K, they go like this sheet to Rav Henkin. Other posts can also hold this way. That's why if you buy Philadelphia cream cheese under the OK, or break some cottage cheese under the OU, or Chav K has a few soft cheeses like this, acid cheeses, they don't have Mashiach Tamidi. They go to Benichtas, Mashiach coming in, however often, every few weeks, whatever it is, make sure the ingredients are kosher, the equipment's kosher. There's no Mashiach there for the cheese making. However, the Star K, Rav Hanim, he's the only national agency who holds this way. They're machmer, like the Hamish agencies. Well, it's a good chumra, find a chumra, this is a good chumra to keep, of Gevina Sakim for acid set cheeses. They don't require it, but since many postgame do, the Chachasadim seems to require it as well. The Aruch HaShulchan is pretty clear about it. Moshe said, I can't be mekel. So they require Mashiach to meet. He puts in, he's there when they make it, and he puts in the acid culture to acidify the milk to make it into cheese. In terms of rennet set cheese, which is more of the hot topic here, you know, we call real cheese, hard cheese that requires an enzyme, rennet enzyme or the equivalent. Rennet set cheeses, so the famous machalokas, I'm sure you've learned it in Yerodea, of the Ramah and the Shach, not only them, I mean, the Gra holds like the Shach, the Chayotim passions like the Shach. There's the machalokas Rishonim, as we see, the Shach brings it in, they bring the Rishonim, but even the Rambam, they always put the Rambam in the Parish of Mishnayos. In the Avodah Zarah, he says, "Beferish Ria, like the Ramah, as long as the Yid is observing the cheese making sure the ingredients are all kosher, no tray for rennets there, it's fine." But the Rambam and the Adah Chazaka doesn't mention that. And the Chazanish's Medayik, there's a very strong diyuk. The Rambam there seems to say, like the Shach, you require the Yisrael to do the Asiya. The Yisrael must do the Asiya. He mentions the Machlokas, the Gersa Tosefta, the Gerah quotes them both, whether Gevinas Yisrael, so to say, is it done by observing it? Or is it done, similar to Bishlakum, by the Asiya, the Yehudi, the Israel must actually participate in the making of the cheese. What the OU and most kosher agencies do, at least they endeavor to do it whenever possible, is to fulfill both. There's a Mashiach there for the entirety of the cheese making to make sure that the ingredients are all kosher, the rennet is kosher, as well as other ingredients, of course, as well. As well as the Israel is the one who, the Mashiach, puts the rennet into the vat. It's microbial rennet. It comes from different types of molds, actually. The rennet they use in kosher cheese is not coming from Orkevus Nevela. The words are coming from prachim. You can get rennet from different sources, from thistle flour, from figs, different vegetables. It's not the common. In Portugal, they make it out of thistle flour, special cheeses. But in America, in most places in the world, when there's cheese not made out of real Orkeva, real, you know, animal Nevela rennet, it's microbial rennet, from microbes, from mold. So the Mashkiach in an OU place normally, places I believe under the Chafke, the OK, whatever, normally Mashkiach will be there to observe everything as well as put the rennet in. So the old-fashioned cheese plant is very easy. I deal with cheese plants, but I don't have any really new you know, cutting-edge dairy companies, for Hashem. The ones I deal with are all the old-fashioned ones. So they make cheese, Mashiach dairy, checks all the ingredients, of course. Then he walks up, there's a vat called Double O Vat. They make the cheese. It's like a large circular tub, and there's a, it's called Double O, because there's a pipe around the tub for heat. Anytime you make cheese, you have to use heat. Sometimes it's a lot of heat, sometimes a little heat. And depending on the type of cheese, the heat will affect the speed of the coagulation of the milk, of the formation into cheese, and so forth. So and it'll affect the type of cheese. And the Mashiach will walk up on a little ladder. He'll have two pails of diluted rennet. He'll pour the rennet in, go back and do it again. I asked Rebelsky, one of the companies wanted the worker to help the Mashiach with it. Rebelsky said, no, the Mashiach should do it himself. He should do it himself. If they wanted, they can. If it's too heavy, the pails of Mashiach, they can divide up the rennet into four pills. He can do it a few times. But Rebelsky said the Mashiach should do the whole thing itself, pouring all the rennet. That's how it's done normally. There are some plants today, new plants, in which they're for safety reasons and efficiency reasons, they don't have anybody pouring in anything. They don't, you can't even see the cheese being made. Everything is closed pipe, closed vat. You can't see the vats. The rennet is dosed in through one pipe, the milk through another pipe, and it goes in and it's made and you don't see a single thing. You can't observe anything. So in those cases, well, he doesn't certify too many of them. I think maybe one of them. I don't deal with it. But other agencies, I'm not sure what they do. But though he requires Mashiachim to be there the entire time to continuously review the ingredients there, as well as to be on site and to be like in the control room when they're making the cheese. We had a case many years ago with rennet casing. Rennet casing is basically like cheese, but without any acid cultures. So therefore, it has no taste. It's like rubber. They use it for imitation cheese, but it's a form of a Gavina. So basically, it's the casing without any fat, any flavor. So we had a case one time in which the Mashiach, the company went ahead and they made a load of it. We had like a 2-week run except for Shabbos. A team Mashiachim there. What happened is the company went ahead and they made a production of this rennet casing without the Mashiach. Here was high tech. The Mashiach activated the button every time, activated the system to dose the rennet in. One time he didn't. He was in the control room, but the guy, the not Jewish worker there, he pushed the button or he activated the thing instead. So Rebelsky told me, Nikr Din B'Devadar, we can consider a kosher. I said, even though he didn't observe the rennet going into the milk, but whatever the closest you can observe, the most important thing to observe is in the control room to see what's being put in. So they dose the rennet, they dose the milk in. Rebelsky said, we can accept it. Normally, Shmichim, we have it normally, Chila, they add the rennet themselves. But in this case, he told me it was fine. There are a few types of cheeses which are borderline cheese. They're acid set cheeses, but they need a little Dover Maimed to finish them off or to form, which is baker's cheese. Baker's cheese, which is the best cheese to use for cheesecake. I don't have it, I don't like cheesecake, but people like it. They said you need this cheese. The real expert mumchim say you need baker's cheese, not cream cheese, baker's cheese for cream cheese. The baker's cheese that uses rennet. It's an acid set cheese. It uses 1/20th the amount of rennet as a real hard cheese, like a mozzarella or a cheddar cheese, whatever it is. You add a little bit of rennet. Without the rennet, it'll be a little bit runny. So we've asked our poskim, Rebelsky or Schechter, about it. We had a meeting with the Chafke, they came also, and they're halachic authorities. And they really was fine. The reason they said it was fine is because there in this case, since we're assuming, like with Henkin, that acid set cheese doesn't require, is not a problem with Nisakum, as long as because you don't need the rennet to make the cheese. So in this case, the amount of rennet, if you figure out the amount of rennet put in, cannot make a curd, cannot make a cheese on its own. If you put the rennet in, this amount of rennet will just leave the thing like liquid. It won't make it into a cheese, into any type of cheese, and there's no problem. So even though you need a drop of rennet for it, with the rennet on its own, without the massive amount of acid cultures to make this cheese, rennet can't do it. Therefore, that's the reason that the agencies permit baker's cheese and cheeses like this. Use a tiny, minute amount of rennet, but on its own, it can't be mined at all. So that's just part of the whole equation. About video supervision. So there's a lot of literature discussion focused about this video chaliva. Chaliva as well as cheese making, I should have gone to it in chaliva, but cheese making also, or video. So some, I was told in there, so I do have video supervision. In America, except for one Israeli agency, not one of the so-called Hamish agencies, an Israeli agency that does around the world their productions, but the Hamish agencies in America do not have video chalipa. They have Yisrael Roy who literally mamish mashkichim at the farm. They don't do video chalipa. Al pisvara, it could be video chalipa. The reason it could be good is because since the mikra din we hold, that with the way the Mahabra and the Rambam hold, that if you take butter and if you heat the butter up, so there's no liquid, no excess milk liquid in the butter. So we say the butter is kosher, even if it's from Chol of Stam, Chol of Akim, whatever. Because you know Chol Behema Tameya Enu Omeid. This must be kosher milk. We have a Anan Sade, we have a Yedia Rura. This is kosher milk. And the form is butter. So therefore, we didn't have witness, eyewitness to it, but we have Yedia Brura, the equivalent of Ri'i or whatever. So that would be the Svara Al-Khara, where video Khalifa would be fine, according to the Rosh, according to the Shulchan Aruch. However, though, again, according to the Rashba and the Ravid, video Khalifa would not be fine. They say, it doesn't matter Yedia Brura, you swear away who is how there goes around all the Machal, these Milchig Akam, you have to have you swear away who. Without that, forget about it. So the Hamish agencies do not accept video Khalifa, at least not in the US, the ones that I've dealt with, work, whatever, there's no, it's all, you know, but cheese is different. Cheese, though, no one does video chalipa. There are really two reasons for this. One reason is a mitzias reason, forget, even for the halacha. I talked to, somebody asked us this, and I was with Rashechter one time asking him, and he says, I said, look, you can put, how in the world, even if you have a camera watching the rennet being put in, who knows where the rennet's coming from? You have to have a camera at the, where the rennet is sourced, and where the rennet's removed, and where the rennet travels. You have to video such a thing is to make sure there's nothing else, no other rennet being used, is not even a shot. That's the mitzvah. But besides that fact, we know by Gavina, we have it in Sif Beis, we have in the Tosam, in the Bodhisattva Lama Hayamad Aleph, the sheet of the Goni Narvona, and the Mokum in a place where they're only mamid cheese with prachim. They don't use any animal enzymes for cheese. Cheese is only made with some kosher, with prachim, whatever, there's vegetation, there's enzymes. In such locations, they say, it's fine, no problem at all. We won't pass in that way. There are more paskins, unless there's a minute mikamonim in a certain place, we don't pass in that way. The Mechaber certainly doesn't accept it. That's not the din. So even though there's a di of rur, we know that in this place, they don't use any, this must be kosher enzymes in the cheese. We don't allow. We need Yisrael to be physically there at the cheese making. So video chaliva has, for video gibun, has a lot of problems, and it's not something that anybody I've ever heard, somebody suggested in a company, and we, because of the Metzias Stam, because of this svar also, it just can't be done. What about whey? Whey, as I mentioned, is the minuscule protein. It's in milk. Now, whey, you can't access whey normally. There's some technology you can do, but it's not common. It's very difficult. You can't access whey by just saying, let's just filter out the milk and we'll get the whey. You can't do that. The reason is because the whey is so minute, so minuscule, its presence is blocked by the larger components of cheese. In order to get to the whey, you have to strip the cheese of its casein, the larger bulky proteins, strip it of its fat globules. Once you remove the bulky parts of the cheese, then you can get to the whey. Then you can get the whey protein, which is just in the watery part of the cheese. So take out the bulky parts of the cheese, the casein and the fat globules, then you can access the whey. That's the reason that whey normally comes from cheese making. It doesn't have to, but the basis is that it's hard to access whey unless you first do a gibun. By removing the fat, removing the larger protein, the casein, then you can access the whey. Whey is very sensitive. Whey actually has, the way that OU certifies it is we have, most agents I believe, we have three requirements in terms of what makes whey kosher. All of these are such machlokas, but we're strict on all three sides of this, and they've looked at the makaros, at least in two of these out of the three, this is the pashtus. Number one, we require the ingredients for the cheese, even though there's no iser. You can have whey from the Gvinas Akum. You can have whey from Gvinas Akum. It's kosher whey. The reason is, parenthetically, because there goes there on the Gvina. The whey is simply the chelik of the milk that never turned into cheese. Once you remove from the cheese the casein protein and remove the fat and you form the cheese, you're left with the psolus, which is just like thin, liquidy milk. It has some bacteria, it has some sugars in it, has whey protein, but the bulk, the chashivus of the milk has been removed and made into cheese, and the psolus is the whey. So chazar goes around the cheese, on the curd, the cheese curd, which is the casein and the fat made into a curd, that you take out of the milk. The remainder of the milk, the psolus, the shiraim of the milk, they won't go around that. And that's where you get the whey. The whey protein is in there. However, in order for whey to be kosher, assuming that there's no problem with venusakim for whey, it doesn't mean it's kosher automatically. I mean, some would do that, but that's not the way that most agencies do it. Number one is all the ingredients have to be kosher. So machlokas poskim, whether or not if you're to mamid cheese with orkev and stavela, is the whey kosher or not. So machlokas poskim. The OU was met with most, I believe, a marachmer, at least in the U.S. In Europe, I think they're making in some places. We're marachmer. If the hamada, based on the chasam sofer, if the hamada was the orkev and stavela, we serve the whey treif. The whey is not kosher because the ramayim created the whey. Rav Vosner seems to make on this in the shape of Levi. However, though, the Chasam Sofer is mocked around this, And there, even though those from Mekel say the Hamada was on the cheese, the Dover Maimi created the cheese. The way is the Memela, the Psolus, that didn't make it, it didn't become cheese. However, though, since this reaction resulted in curd and cheese curd in a whey, therefore, that's the reason that we don't give hashgacha to whey in which there was any non-kosher ingredient, in particular the maimi, the enzyme. But second thing is that a lot of cheese are made at hot temperatures, as I mentioned. In order to have a certain texture and flavor, the cheese, the cultures you put into the cheese, as well as the temperatures, that designs the cheese. If you want to make a Parmesan cheese, you have to make it about 145 degrees. That's the yatza lettuce, according to almost everyone. In order to make a Swiss cheese, it's usually 126 degrees. These cheeses that are hot cheeses, you have in the vat, the whey is the liquid in the vat that doesn't become cheese, but it's contacting the cheese curd in the vat. Therefore, if you have a hot vat cheese made 145 degrees, you have hot Gewina Sachum cheese curd touching in contact, mixed in with whey, which otherwise would be kosher. This whey has blios of iser, and it's a problem. Ramosha is matra this way, but many poskim don't accept this way as kosher. They say it's blios of iser, and therefore you can't give ashkacha, you can't consume this whey. The third thing is the most complicated, the most problematic aspect of whey is as follows. Certain cheeses, they're called pasta filata cheeses that are Italian cheeses that are meant to melt into other foods, such as mozzarella, provolone cheese. If you want to make a pizza, why is the mozzarella good for pizza? Because it's elastic. If you melt the mozzarella, it's elastic. It doesn't just run off the pizza. If you were to melt, say, cheddar cheese like onto a cracker or a piece of dough, whatever it is, it melts off the whole thing. It usually falls on the edge of the toaster oven. It doesn't stick. It's not elastic. But mozzarella is beautiful because it's elastic. It's a sticky consistency. And the reason that is because after the mozzarella is made in the vat, they take the mozzarella out of the vat, and they put it in a large bath, and about 175 degrees, this mozzarella, which is Gewinas Akum, assume it's in the vat, it's in the cooker, they take it put it in hot water, and they pull it and push it and stretch it and mush it around and so forth, for about half an hour to give it an elastic texture. This mozzarella has elastic texture. Now it's a good mozzarella. You can melt it on things, it'll melt properly and pizza and into pasta and so forth. But the water they melted this mozzarella in, the water that they cooked it in this cooker, is treif. It has blios of mozzarella, and there's a mushus of mozzarella. There's a lot of fat mozzarella absorbed in this water. Non-kosher whey companies will take this cooker water, which you cook the mozzarella cheese in, and they'll throw it into their whey. They say it has the same flavor as the whey, the cheesy flavor. It's thin, watery stuff like whey. Why throw it out? There's a lot of sanitation problems. If you were to dump it, dispose it, put it into the whey. Most companies, treif ones, will put their cooker water into the whey. And one third of the cheese, actually, you should know, in America is mozzarella cheese. And that's the reason that so much of the whey in America is not kosher whey. They take this mozzarella cooker water, in which they cook the mozzarella 175 degrees, the Gewinas Akum curd. They took this water and they put it into the whey, and they contaminate the whey and make it not kosher. That's the reason that whey is in particular so sensitive, for these three reasons again. The ingredients in the whey and the cheese can be problematic. In America, most cheeses do not have orchivus available. Most of them are microbial remnant. Organic cheeses, they don't allow microbial very often. Very often they want the real, the original, the natural orchivus novella. But most cheeses in America are not that way. But then some cheeses are hot temperature. The third thing is you have cheese that are hot Italian cooked cheeses, and that's a lot of cheeses, in which there's the cooker water, and they put that water into the whey. Did I go for time? Are I okay so far? Oh, okay, first one. We'll go to butter, then we'll talk some questions, okay? Butter production. How is butter made? So butter is taking another component of milk, manipulating it, and that's the fat. Milk has yellowish fat globules. You either take the fat globules out of the milk and concentrate them and condense them and put them into one place and get rid of all the excess stuff, that's butter. Butter is pure fat. Butter is pure fat. So what the companies do is they take regular fresh raw milk and they separate it. They put it through a separator, and the separator creates two things. It creates skim milk, which is fat-free milk, and it creates cream. Cream is the fatty part of milk. Cream is the fatty part of milk. A lot of excess liquid, watery liquid there, that's your cream. So first you take milk, put it through a separator. So you have skim milk, which is the fat-free milk, and you have cream, which is fat, liquidy fat, milk fat. That's what cream is. They call it sweet cream. Sweet cream. There's also whey cream. Whey cream is, parenthetically, is the fatty part of whey. Whey has some fat in it. Whey cream can be very often non-kosher. If the whey is not kosher, the whey cream is not kosher. So whey cream, that's a big problem. But regular sweet cream, fresh cream, is the fatty part of milk. Then the milk, basically just summarizing it, the cream is churned. They churn it, which means that they're putting it into a clothes dryer, basically, and a clothes washer, and it spins it and spins it, and it concentrates together the thickest parts of the fat. And the thinner parts of the fat, the liquidy parts called buttermilk, those are separated out. Those fall out the bottom. Those are evacuated out the bottom. But butter, though, is a concentrated part of fat. So that's what butter is. We talked about that since you can't be mamid, chol behema tameya, therefore there are those, machlokas, machgonim, everyone quotes this, those who hold that butter is fine as long as there's no excess liquid in it, it's fine. The butter we have today, in the old days, the Rishonim talk about being mavashal lechema in order to get the liquid out, to make sure there's no chol behema tameya. The butter we have today, though, has far, far less moisture than the butter that they had in the old days. The butter is like a third or a fourth or a fifth of a tiny amount of the moisture, a fraction of the moisture. I talked to Rav Schechter recently about it, and he felt that today, lechora, you're not to be mavashal the butter, to be matcha the butter, according to the Mechaber, because whatever excess challah, behema, tamea, whatever would have been there, you know, it's not like the old butter that's like some type of liquidy, mushy, gushy thing that's dripping, whatever. It's basically pretty dry as it is. You can melt it, it's pretty dry. Therefore, you don't have to worry about excess chol behema tameya. However, though, butter, and again, the butter, you know, the Rashba and the Ravid, you know, they go to town against those who are matcher the butter. They say Chazal were gozer against opposed to Rimi Gash, who says that the tam is part of the gezerah. Chazal were gozer gezerah luchletus and on the mahalayakum. Therefore, it doesn't matter the reason. If you think you got rid of the chol of behema tameya, doesn't matter. The butter is us. They asur this food is asur pechlet. So therefore, that's that. But today, a lot of butter has what's called starter distillate. Starter distillate is an artificial, is a butter flavor, comes from chalav stam, which is added to butter. A lot of butter is very bland. Natural butter, sweet cream butter, is very bland. It has almost no taste. The higher grade butter, if you get double grade butter, you know what that means? Double A butter means the butter has no taste, basically. The taste is very smooth. The more flavor butter has, the lower grade it'll be. Grade B butter has like a tangy, almost a cheesy taste, and off-grade butter is even more cheesy. And the reason is, the lower grade butter has whey cream mixed into it, or is sometimes fully from whey cream. Whey cream, again, is the fatty part of whey, and it can be very often not kosher. So, but you can make butter out of it. You can solidify it into butter, like you can make, like you take real cream, make it into butter. So the higher grade butter is grade A butter. It has no taste. It's sweet cream, pure cream butter, no taste, smooth feel, not a cheesy, you know, roughy, grainy feel, whatever it is. The OU, as well as I think all the agencies, we do not tell people to buy grade A butter, saying you can assume there's no whey cream. We don't do that. Even though on the books, if you go through the regulations, you'll see that according to federal law, butter has to come from sweet cream. You can't put whey cream in it. However, our head mashgichim have spoken with government inspectors who have said that we don't care what kind of cream you're putting in, as long as the taste is bland enough and the feel is bland enough, put what you want. It's not going to, it'll pass the grade. The grade is an organoleptic grading based upon taste and mouthfeel, not ingredients. So because of that information that we have from the inspectors who are on the front lines, or on the ground, that's the reason that we don't accept butter as kosher without mashichim there. It doesn't matter what's on the books, as we know, it's not always what's followed, lemaisa. But however, butter, though, because it's so bland, real butter, good sweet cream butter, pure double A butter, because of land, you want to have a flavor. A lot of companies will put in a flavor called starter distillate. Starter distillate. What they do is they take milk, and they condense the milk. They distill the milk they first condense the milk, removing excess liquid, so the milk is more potent. Then they distill flavors out of the milk. They distill taste out of the milk, certain milk flavors, and these flavors are concentrated and added to butter when the butter is churned. So this is flavor, which is whole of some flavor. It's not just milk. It's a flavor that's derived from a milk source, put into butter to make the butter have more of a flavor, because otherwise it would have almost no taste. It would taste like, come out like water. So Rebelsky has told me, this is what I think most people know this way. Because of that reason, people who were mako, like the Kuradin of the Shulchan Aruch, the Rambam, to eat butter, even their machmen chol israel, the leaf butter that's chol stam, because of this reason, the leaf butter that contains this, they should not consume. This butter has a chol of stam additive to it, not an additive that has the heter of chol behemet tamei no omeid, because it's not real milk, it's a concentrate based from milk. And therefore, because of that reason, you'll see on butters, you'll see artificial flavor, or natural flavor, or butter flavor, or starter distillate. Anything added besides cream and salt means it contains this dairy additive to it. And therefore, if you're machmen chol israel, then you shouldn't be having, you should make sure you get butter that's chol israel also, not rely upon this. If there's anything else I should cover, I will, unless the questions, whatever the other one wants.
You mean equipment? You
The area equivalent, yes, yes. So this is before, the OU only certifies, we only certify the D, we don't have a DE symbol. It's either PAR or it's OUD. OUD, Rabbi Ganak feels the OUDE or the DE from whoever is a confusing symbol. People are not going to know what it means. People are going to think it means that, oh, it's just, maybe a chumra we can do. It's really PAR, whatever it is. So that's why not. DE can mean many things. If you see something from another agency with a DE symbol, it either means that it's made on hot kalim that were not kosher, but there's no milchiks in it, or it's made on kalim that were not cleaned properly. They were not cleaned, but can have dairy residue, but either the residue is butel or it's not going to osir or make other foods dairy, and so forth. The OU, though, does not have the DE symbol. We only have D. If you see something that says an OUD and you think it doesn't really have any milchiks in it, there's reason for the D. If it's really PARB, it's not going to say OUD. It'll have OU plain. But if you see a D on it, you can contact the OU, and we will tell you whether or not there's real milchigs or it's a dairy equivalent or whatever it is. In dairy products and products that are, I shouldn't dairy products that are a lot of products are made in dairies because the equipment is very compatible. For instance, soy milk. Most soy milk in the country is made in dairy plants and milk plants, so the equipment is compatible. Soy milk has to be pasteurized, has to kill the germs, has to be bottled in milk equipment and milk containers and so forth. So milk equipment is ideal for making soy milk. The soy milk, very often you'll see an OUD on it. The reason is because it's made in equipment that was made for pasteurizing, for heat treating milk, and was not koshered afterwards. Normally the equipment will have a pegima. No, I can't say always. Usually have a pegima, so Yikir din b'dyavid, you know, whatever, it'll be parv. However, though, not always, and it'll normally be if the equipment wasn't kosher. We do have cases in which it would, of course, be kosher equipment l'chachila, but the equipment is only pogim, not kosher l'chachila. If there's no koshering, then that's a problem. You should know also, a lot of these are called aseptic-filled products. Products that have long shelf life, like juice boxes, soy milk boxes, all things that are boxed drinks, don't require refrigeration. I mean, once you open it, refrigerate it. Before, you don't have to. These drinks are made on equipment that very often is shared with all types of tarfers, and there's not necessarily koshering at all in between. Very often, the cleaning is a sterilization without even a caustic, a pegima, a hot temperature. I know plants in which they will make milk boxes, and box little milk thing, they'll also make hot chicken soup, vela chicken soup, or clam soup and all types of stuff, and stamianum grape juice, the same equipment, not even in dairies. So a lot of the time, you have companies that are co-packers, contract packers. They are not mucus for any one food, and they just have, whoever wants to have their stuff made long shelf life aseptic, send it to us, we'll pack it. We'll do milk inflation, custard, trafe, anything you want, we'll just pay us, and we'll give us the stuff, and we'll pack it. We'll do it hot, and we'll pack it. And there may be no kosher. They do a sterilization, just a high temperature, usually way in excess of 200 degrees, very high temperature under a lot of pressure, and a lot of the time, they don't need to use a certain caustic, at least not at a certain temperature. They can do a cooler caustic, and they do a sterilization, and it's for them, it's fine. The equipment is totally trafe. Usually it's going to be Benyomo equipment, and so anything that's in the one of these juice box type, even though certain products, again, example, the OU holds Mikrodin, that orange juice, regular orange juice, no ingredients, regular pure fresh orange juice, whatever it is, if you're out and stuck in Montana somewhere you can't get it, you can buy without a hasher, let's say. That'll only be for fresh orange juice. But orange juice box, don't ever buy that hasher. Same thing for anything, even for milk, I would tell you, don't buy without it. When we give hashach to milk, by the way, people always ask, if you see an OUD on milk, is it halav Israel? The answer is no. Our mashgichim are making sure that the equipment is kosher and making sure the vitamins are kosher. But there's no mashgichim at the milking itself. But however, though, if you're stuck somewhere and there's no milk, you want to buy cholestam, no milk with an OUD, you want to buy a milk box, let's say, or whatever, don't buy a long shelf life, non-refrigerated milk, these boxes of milk. It could very well have been had, chicken broth made, 5 minutes before the milk without any koshering. That's a very big chashash.
Would the
Vajbun
right have a problem with
OUD? OUDE, in terms of?
In terms of,
I would think so. I would think, again, there are Shulchan Aruch and the Chacham don't pass in that way, but there certainly is an important shita, and it's certainly according to them, would make a problem.
How's American cheese made?
Oh, good point. American cheese is made out of, American cheese is the dairy version of Frankfurters, of hot dogs, which means you take the garbage, the junky cheese scraps, leftover scraps, usually of cheddar cheese, not good quality, it's usually really the bottom of the barrel of cheddar cheese. They melt it down, they add other things to it, flavorings, sometimes even oils and other stuff to spice it up, and they heat it, they melt it, they remold it, and they slice it. That's American cheese. So American cheese is made out of cheese, has all the halachas given us akum. It's very kosher sensitive, but it's cheese that's been remelted. There's nafkamina in here, it's very important nafkamina, which is waiting 6 hours. I didn't talk about that. Waiting 6 hours. I know you're, it's not in Kufdes Vav, but can I talk about for a moment, Rosh Hashanah? Waiting 6 hours. So we're waiting 6 hours. The cheese is in pay tests about weight the Moab brings and the Beis Yosef himself. He doesn't. The Machad doesn't quote the Beis Yosef that does have this in the tour. But waiting after eating Gavina Kasha, waiting having cheese that's very hard brittle cheese, whatever. So waiting before you have. If you normally wait 6 hours. You wait 6 hours. In my neighborhood, a lot of the German Jews, they wait 3 hours. They'd have to have Swiss cheese and they have to wait 3 hours before they have their fleishes, whatever it is. But that's how it is. So there's a machlokus about this. Two machlokus I want to mention very quickly. Number one is what's considered Gavina Kasha, what's considered hard cheese. So Rav Hanina reports that Ron Cutler said to him, Rav Hanina was a teenager at the time, must have been, he said that Ron Cutler sheet was only cheese that is so brittle that you can't even slice it is Gavina Kasha. You have to wait 6 hours after it. So according to that, they say Parmesan. You can't slice Parmesan cheese. Real Parmesan cheese is aged 10 to 24 months. If you slice it, it'll break. It won't slice. You can't slice it into pieces. So, for instance, Parmesan, you'd have to wait after the holidays. Maybe aged Romano, certain types of Romano. But most cheeses, according to the Mahalach, you don't have to wait after, because most cheeses you can slice. And the other extreme offset of the spectrum is another shita, which is the Pavlovar, I think, supplied this to his products, Mahadron brand products, used to certify, which is any cheese that's aged 6 months, regardless of its texture, you have to wait. You have to wait. If it's aged on the shelf, aged in the fridge, aged in the supermarket, aged 6 months, you have to wait no matter what. The OU takes, the OU's posting rebels, you have to have an intermediary, and I think most people go this way, intermediate, which is like this. If you require the cheese to be aged 6 months, approximately 6 months to make that type of cheese, if you can't make that cheese unless it ages 6 months, that type of cheese, then you have to wait. For instance, you can't make Parmesan cheese, regular Parmesan, by aging it 3 months. It will not form. It'll be a different flavor, different texture. You can't make it. However, if you were to make an Edam or Gouda cheese, those cheeses are aged about 2 or 3 months. If you were to make them and let them age 3 more months and they have the same texture, let's say, you wouldn't have to wait because those cheeses don't require waiting. There's no thing about the texture that requires this 6 months aging period, or approximately 6 months. But if it requires that type of period, then you'd have to wait. What about cheese? There's a famous machlokus, the Holmes Postium, Yad Yehud, Sheet of Yad Yehud. Yad Yehud says if you have cheese that has been, if you have cheese that's melted cheese that's melted. Yad Yehud writes that cheese that's been melted, machlokus how you interpret it, cheese that's been melted doesn't have this problem. The reason is very simple, because once cheese is melted, the cheese doesn't have the same brittle texture, the firmness of the cheese. The nace, like basa ben ashinayim, doesn't apply. The cheese, even if you re-solidify it, it doesn't have the original brittle texture. So some postgame interpret the Yad Yehuda to say, if you look at it carefully, he's talking about a case of tavshil shugavinim, tavshil shabasar. Some say Yad Yehuda only applies, this hetzer only applies if you have cheese which has been melted into a food and the cheese is not an identifiable thing by itself. Like let's say a person melts some Parmesan cheese into, eggplant Parmesan, but it's not, but it's melted into it, some uruv with the rest. Then you wouldn't have to wait. But if you were to make American cheese, and melted cheese, you would have to wait. Because there, and the majority of American cheese is cheddar cheese. It's not aged. Cheddar cheese, Americans always never age. But if you were to take real aged cheddar, and melt it, you'd have to wait. Other mahalach is. The pashas is, no, once you've melted it, whether it's banned or not, it's melted cheese, lost the texture, and have to wait. I'll conclude with this one thing, though. First of all, Dov Fein doesn't hold that way. He'll have to wait regardless. He's not accept the Yad Yehud, and many posts don't accept. They say if it's aged cheese, even after melting, you have to wait. So Machlokas posting. They'll use officially make, we tell the people that Machlokas posting. Last thing is as follows. Some posts he mentioned, though, and this is the way that they bring it down, which is the cheese, even if it's not hard cheese, not Gavina Kasha, but if the cheese has the Mashiach's Tam, there are two reasons for waiting after Basar Barchola. Basar Bin Ashinayim, it sticks to the mouth, or it has a very, very potent taste. So if you have cheese, it has a very potent taste to it. Even if it's not an aged cheese, you have to wait. So Rebelski told me Limburger cheese, Avade, wait after that before having Fleishig. It's a very strong tom. I don't think a kosher Limburger in the market, but there is. Danish blue cheese has a potent taste. If you buy one that has a strong taste, you have to wait. Even though it's aged only about 2 months, 2.5 months, you have to wait. Because the Mashiach's tom is a very strong, potent taste. You'd have to wait after that also. I hope I didn't go too long, and thank you all for coming.